Hey, this is Kyle Clark. You're listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News and streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. There are precious places in Colorado protected because of their history. Think the Mesa Verde Cliff Dwellings, Bent's Fort in Otero County, or even Denver's Union Station. A federal agency evaluates proposed projects in those places with a focus on preservation, a process that today includes local input. Tomorrow, it may not. Our Marshall Zellinger explains.
It doesn't need to be written on the wall to know you're looking at history.
Denver Union Station actually is an example.
Historic sites and buildings have extra protection by Section 106 of the National Historic Preservation Act, which requires consultation with the public before decisions are made that could impact history.
The proposed changes are concerning because they could limit that voice, the voice of the people that are closest to the places that live with them every day.
Annie Levinsky knows her history as Vice President of History Colorado, and she knows Section 106, which could change after Friday. The federal agency that oversees historic preservation is voting to potentially change the rules around it. One change would make public comment optional instead of required. Another would change definitions of what is historic. It seems the changes are to streamline the work President Trump is doing to the reflecting pool and the arch he wants to build in Washington. But the changes would also impact many Colorado historic sites.
Like the idea that someone wants to develop or drill oil at Mesa Verde.
Exactly. Yeah, 100%. I mean, those are really, those are realistic consequences that could happen.
Jasmine Saxon is an archaeologist who knows historic doesn't just mean old and dusty.
It's not just these massive projects like Mesa Verde or Bent's Old Fort. It's your historic library downtown. It's the park that you like to go to.
Larimer Square is an example of historic preservation. There's even an example downtown that no longer exists, in part because the protections weren't in place yet.
Probably the most famous local example is the Maybe&F department store. There used to be a whole elegant store attached to that tower, and it was demolished as part of an urban renewal project at a highway project, actually, that was never built. Ultimately, the tower was sort of one of the first things saved by Section 106 as a compromise in the very earliest days of the law.
These changes to historic preservation law would also impact tribal lands in southwestern Colorado. It could reduce or eliminate any input from the tribes. I tried reaching out to both the Southern Ute and Ute Mountain Ute tribes, who actually had leadership in Denver at a conference today, but neither wanted to talk just yet on this topic.
So say if a governor wanted to bulldoze a pedestrian bridge into Civic Center Park. No, that would never happen. That would be crazy. What would constitute a change at one of these historic places?
I mean, I guess a request. Like, the joke I was making with the two interviews today is, what if somebody wanted to come to Bent's Old Fort and say, let's bulldoze these and build a Buc-ee's out here?
Mm-hmm.
Like, right now, there's community input to say, here's why we wouldn't want that. Under these changes, it could be the agency in Washington, D.C. saying, that looks like a good place for a Buc-ee's. Let's do that.
Yeah, you know what they call that local input? They call that red tape. Cut that red tape is what that is. All right, Marshall, thank you. The Trump administration is suing Colorado over a state law that allows students without legal immigration status to get in-state college tuition and financial aid. The Justice Department is trying to get rid of similar programs across the country, arguing that they unfairly disadvantage U.S. citizens. The feds want to overturn Colorado's Advancing Students for a Stronger Tomorrow Act, or ASSET. It passed back in 2013. The law allows undocumented students to qualify for in-state tuition rates as long as they meet qualifications like going to a Colorado high school for a year before graduation. The DOJ says that's not fair because it allows immigrants without authorization to pay lower tuition rates than American citizens who would pay out-of-state tuition rates. If the discount rate is not available to all American citizens, the DOJ says granting discounts to non-citizens is unconstitutional. The DOJ is suing several states for similar laws, and they had recent success overturning a program in Texas. It's not clear exactly how many undocumented students go to college in Colorado, but the nonprofit President's Alliance on Higher Education and Immigration estimates the number is around 6,700 students. Republican gubernatorial candidate Victor Marks faces a new complaint from the state's elections division that he took in hundreds of donations over the legal limit and then did not refund the money when he was warned. The state offered the Marks campaign a chance to fix the issues. When they didn't, the state filed a complaint with a hearing officer today, which could lead to tens of thousands of dollars in fines against the Marks campaign, which had an enormous fundraising edge in the Republican primary. Marks' campaign told me today that they are, quote, cooperating fully to resolve any outstanding questions. And they also said, quote, they don't believe it's appropriate to litigate the details through the media. Every day, flights run by ICE Air Operations send hundreds of detainees far from where they were arrested. ICE says it's about finding open bed space. But that doesn't completely explain why a pair of Cuban nationals ended here in Colorado. Here's investigative reporter Chris Vanderbeek.
Yo soy de Cuba y llevo casi 5 años en los Estados Unidos.
Why did you want to come to the States?
Vine buscando libertad, vine buscando un sueño, salir de un país con persecución.
In South Florida, U.S. Highway 1 forms the spine of the Florida Keys. For most, it's a path to paradise. For a man named Yanier, in late 2025, it was anything but.
Yo vine por libertad y se me acabó en ese momento. De hecho, el día que me detuvieron me dijeron que le pregunté por qué me estaban detuviendo y me dijeron así que su presidente decía que yo era un criminal.
Neither he nor this man, who doesn't want us to use his name.
Yo soy de Cuba.
Neither, according to filings in federal court, has a criminal record in the United States. Florida State Patrol stopped both while the two were headed to a job.
Yo pensaba que cuando el presidente decía que iban a hacer redadas masivas, era hacia, no sé, hacia los delincuentes, hacia las personas que tenían causas y delitos, algo así, pero no como nosotros que somos personas de trabajo, de casa, de familia.
Weeks after their arrests and while in Miami, the U.S. government put the two on a plane.
Pensé que ya se había acabado el sueño, que ya me iban a devolver para Cuba.
You had no idea where you were going?
No.
And you just get a notification that they're being moved, but the notification doesn't say where they're being moved to. You just know they're getting moved.
Even their attorneys did not know where they were headed.
We had no idea they were being moved until it happened.
Only later did they find out the flight headed not south, but 1,700 miles west and north to a detention center in a city neither had seen, much less visited.
Me llevaron a Denver, Colorado.
Fue difícil porque las personas que vivían en Colorado los podían visitar a la familia, los podían ver generalmente todos los días. Y al moverme, pues, yo no tenía nada de eso. Era más difícil, las llamadas eran más difíciles, había pocos medios para comunicarse.
The flight they took, our investigation found it. Flight number GXA-6181, an Airbus 320 operated by GlobalX.
Tu vida se desborona, todos los sentimientos decaen, encima, lo pides todo.
In early 2026, federal judges found problems with the way ICE handled the cases of these two. One judge ruled Yanier had been improperly detained, adding the federal government failed to follow its own regulations in how it arrested and detained him. 3 months after GXA-6181 left Miami, ICE released Yanier just in time for him to watch his daughter's first dance recital in Florida.
What's her name?
Gisela. Gisela.
How old is she?
3 years.
Your first?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pensar en ella, saber que podía estar con ella otra vez, era lo único que pensaba. Pero nunca pensé en salir, que pensé que podía salir. Nunca pensé que voy a salir de ahí. Y cuando se acercó el tiempo que la abogada me dijeron que me habían dado la orden del juez, pues, no me lo creía.
You can watch the full hour-long documentary ICE Air, Inside America's Secret Deportation Network, streaming now on the 9 News app. Just scan that QR code on your screen to watch for free. Three Colorado congressmen are teaming up to protect the Glenwood Springs Hot Springs from a massive mining project.
This tells a lot of the stories This is the first 2 years after the flood.
Each year, there are fewer people to remember the historic Big Thompson flood of 1976. So one woman took it upon herself to share the story. That's next. What the deuce are you doing, man?
Kyle, it's July 23rd. Duh, the march to winter officially begins today.
Oh, goodness. What?
Somehow you rejected when I offered you the opportunity to march with me. You said no for whatever reason. On a serious note, today officially marks the march to winter. Here's what I mean by that. Our average high temperature went from 91 degrees yesterday to 90 degrees today, and it will continue to drop slowly but surely until December the 15th, when our average high is, Kyle, you want to guess? Average high on December the 15th in Denver?
I don't know.
Kyle doesn't know. 43 degrees. So we're going to drop from 91 as of yesterday all the way down to 43. We start today. Showers and storms for us here across much of northeast Colorado, but this is the Aspen Acres fire, which is under a flash flood warning for the next few minutes. Northeast Colorado, Fort Collins, round two of storms heading your way. We got some more showers and storms for the rest of the evening across the northeast part of the state. Also, southern Colorado, a few more storms before we clear things up for the next few days because of this ridge of high pressure that'll move in, that'll keep us on the hot and dry side through the weekend. So while in terms of those averages, the march to winter officially begins today, Mother Nature saying a little bit otherwise, the high near 100 both days this weekend. Showers and storms return early to mid next week.
Coloradans in Congress are trying to stop the feds from allowing a controversial gravel mine expansion near Glenwood Springs. The bipartisan team behind what's being called the Glenwood Springs Protection Act says that expanding the mining operations could do irreparable damage to the famous hot springs in the area. For years, the owners of Mid-Continent Limestone Quarry have been trying to triple the size of their operation, which sits above Glenwood Springs. The proposal's drawn opposition from tribal leaders and local governments who worried that the increased traffic and drilling could harm the groundwater network that feeds the Glenwood Hot Springs. Springs are a major tourist draw, and they hold cultural significance for the Southern Ute tribe. Earlier this year, the Bureau of Land Management advanced a proposal that would triple the size of that mine. Republican Congressman Jeff Hurd has introduced a bill to stop the expansion. He has the support of Colorado's Democratic senators, Michael Bennett and John Hickenlooper. Hurd says he's all for mining, but not at the expense of what he called a quote-unquote iconic resource.
Responsible resource development means recognizing that not every location is the right place for every project. Responsible resource development, it requires judgment. It requires balance. And it requires respecting the communities that live with the decisions that are made long after Washington has moved on.
That mine currently is not operating. It was shut down in 2024 after the BLM found that the mine was selling common gravel and not the high-quality limestone that it had a permit to produce. If the expansion is approved and the mine resumes operations, it would grow from 16 acres to 56.
Tonight's next question comes from a viewer named Daniel. Yesterday's story about retail delivery via drone got him thinking. If he's sitting outside, what's stopping one of these drones from just flying right into him like, flack, you know? Is somebody piloting the drone? Is somebody watching the process?
Daniel, that's a good question. Each drone company has their own procedures, but Wing, the Walmart partner that's pitching a drone hub near Parker and Castle Rock, says its drones are largely autonomous. Humans at a hub have oversight over an entire fleet, but they're not looking at individual drones, kind of like air traffic control versus a pilot. As for the risk of you getting flapped by a drone, that should be pretty low. Wing's drones don't land on your porch. They hover up in the air and they lower the package via a tether. The drones also have obstacle avoidance systems. They're built to go around objects. That was interesting to look into. Send us any next questions you have, anything about Colorado that you've ever wondered about. We welcome written questions, video questions. Email them all to next@ninenews.com or text next 303-871-1491.
Yes, I'm a historian now. I didn't plan to be.
An accidental historian keeping history alive 50 years after the tragedy along the Big Thompson. And a reminder, you can catch this program streaming each night, 6 p.m., wherever you watch, and next is a podcast wherever you get your podcasts. People who lived in Big Thompson Canyon 50 years ago wouldn't have known it, but on the evening of July 31st, their lives and the place they called home would change forever. We spoke to one of the many people who have documented and shared stories of the flood of 76.
There's never a day that's the same in the canyon. If it floods, then it's just another day, and you have more to take care of then. My name is Charlene Wamsley, and everybody calls me Char. I guess I'm a historian now. I didn't plan to be. The Big Thompson Canyon flood started up in the highest part of the canyon that it could, and probably 11 to 12 inches of rain came down within 4 hours. That was Saturday afternoon on the 31st of July, 1976. This tells a lot of the stories. This is the first 2 years after the flood. There was a lot of loss. There was a lot of giving. It really showed how people could come together in these cases. And then there was this one that came out right after the flood. My dad came and bought this place in 1963. You can see the house down here. My parents, on Saturday afternoon, had decided to go fishing with a cousin up in Laramie, Wyoming, and spend a few days. So they missed the flood. I came the next week just to protect my dad's house. That's me. And my dad taking a picture of me, taking a picture. When I moved up to the canyon the first time, I joined the Drake Club. Every time we would meet, the conversation went back to the flood and what happened. And I told them they're getting old and they needed to have these histories written down. We did the reflections on the river. This is one of the heroes, as far as I'm concerned, the Nicholson family. They sent the kids up to the Park Terrace Motel to warn Bertha Bailey. She was the first one out by helicopter the next day. These are the kind of stories that they would tell. And that's what encouraged me to start doing the book. It's an extremely dynamic place. So you're used to the changes all the time. You just learn to take that day and enjoy that day.
Char will be giving a presentation on the history of the flood August 1st at the Big Thompson Association up in Drake. We're back with your feedback next. Oh, that's a good one.
In solidarity with Crispy.
Yes, yes. Now I feel left out.
Yeah, be a team player.
It's a sign to keep it moving in the men's restroom. Next viewer named Bill snapped this photo at the Denver Eisenhower Rec Center. A urinal marked, "This is not a parking space. Please park in designated spaces only." This is one of those signs you see and you think, what led to this? Got a lot of guys lingering at the bowl. They need an out of order sign. They couldn't find one. They just had the parking space signs. I want to know the story behind this. If you know the story or you see a sign that makes you do a double take, email to next@ninenews.com. John writes in with a colorful piece of feedback tonight. He says, when Kyle and Marshall are reporting news, Kyle looks like Pee Wee Herman. Marshall looks like the Hobo Red Skelton. That's actually pretty good. See, John, we like to think about that as an added benefit of watching Next. You get your news from any other channel where all the dudes are dressed identically and boring, all like each other. Here you get the news and the presenters are dressed like various clowns and comedians of American history. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News. Streaming live, same time, on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@ninenews.com. Next producer is Mallory Harris. Our digital producer is Marilyn Moore. Our visual editor is Jeff Sartell. Our reporters include Marshall Zellinger, Mark Salinger, Angeline McCall, and Evan Kruel. Misty Montano is 9 News' digital director. I'm Kyle Clark. I'll see you next time.